Welcome to the third episode of Texas Crime Cast by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Tristan Hallman. I'm not all about PR, but here's a guy who is.
Is that when he showed me this, I about it got as bad as, there's about three incidents that I've been really, really disappointed in employees and just severely pissed off, and that's one of them. Because I'm all about the team, I'm all about PR and how this high school looks.
So that clip, what you just heard, was a teacher's recording of a Prosper ISD principal. The teacher had just alleged to the city police department that her colleague made an inappropriate advance on a student. We'll be talking about that story today. And we'll also hear from Dallas ISD Chief Craig Miller about that case. We'll also talk about the turmoil surrounding Dallas Police Chief David Brown and a story about steroid rings with manufacturing labs in North Texas. My co-hosts today are Jen Emily, who covers criminal justice issues. Hey, Jen.
Hello.
And Kevin Krause, our federal courts reporter.
Hello there.
This is Kevin's first show since you went to Florida, and you won an award there. Is that right?
I did. Thank you for mentioning that, as I told you too at the beginning of the show. No. yes, I did. It was for FOIA, Freedom of Information.
And what story was that for?
This was a story about a organization that some local governments created. They made it, turned it into a nonprofit, and they tried to claim that they were not subject to the Open Records Act. And so we said they were. We went to court, and we won.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed Florida and the legendary Florida man who's responsible for some of the weirdest crimes in the country.
I love the Florida man.
Who doesn't love the Florida man?
Not a Florida man, actually a Dallas native, our first story today. Chief David Brown, there's been the saga all week. After late last week, two city council members inquired with the city manager about Chief David Brown's future. They may have brought up retirement. They said they probably brought up retirement. The mayor says no, they were asking for his resignation by the end of the year. So there's a little bit of dispute over that. Brown has had the job since 2010, and the saga keeps going. On Monday, he showed up to the city council and for the public safety committee, which he normally does, you know, every month. It was a bit of a strange thing. He walked alone into the meeting. He usually walks very fast, and he kind of talks. He's got a kind of going a million miles a minute. Slowed down. He hasn't ducked the press at all. Which normally in these, when he goes to these committee meetings, he at one time I've had to actually kind of chase him down the hallway after he told me he wasn't going to comment and try to ask him questions until he got in the elevator. Yesterday, the police unions from across the country, we saw the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the largest one in the country, show up. We saw the National Black Police Association's vice chair show up, and they're all calling for a leadership change. It's definitely the most turmoil I've seen at the police department since I've been covering it.
Is it true, Tristan, that most big city police chiefs only last about 3 years?
That's been kind of the word. I can't verify that. The chief has lasted here for 5.5 years, and that's a long time. And he acknowledged in kind of – he didn't mean it this way, but he said, I'm on borrowed time. That makes it sound like he should already be gone. Technically, you know, if you look at the tenure of police chiefs around here, that might be true. He has lasted a long time because he's very savvy. When he showed up on Monday, he obviously had all weekend to think about what he was going to say, and he chose to say, you know, I'm asking for prayers. And he is a very religious man, but you have to imagine there's some sort of tactical reason why he's continued to emphasize that in the face of a lot of scrutiny.
There's always tension between police chiefs and unions and, you know, the rank and file and the chief. What is it specifically about David Brown that has this coming up now, or what has it been about his tenure?
It's been a lot of things. There's this weird kind of paradox where you see the chief in public. The public loves that, you know, for the most part, seems to love the chief. He's very well regarded. I had a former city councilman tell me this week, David Brown does more speaking events than I ever did on the city council. He shows up. He comes out in public. He shows up to events. He's very smart, very witty. He's, you know, charming to be around. But the word is inside the department that what we've seen is sort of the high attrition, the rumors of, you know, low morale. There's been a morale survey where the Dallas Police Association said, about 1,000 at least members of the police department think morale is low or the lowest it's ever been. you know, that doesn't speak for the whole 3,500 officers, but it certainly is a snapshot into what people are thinking. And there's sort of that paradox between the public's David Brown and the one that manages the police department. So he's done a very good job navigating the political water so far, but we'll have to see whether the internal turmoil finally takes over. And so far, the mayor and city manager have offered their support. Enough about that. Let's move on to our next case on the docket. Kevin, I understand there was a steroid ring kind of tied to North Texas involving a college professor.
That's correct, yeah. There have been steroid rings before in North Texas, but this one's a little unusual because it involved a biophysics and biochemistry professor at the University of Auburn. And he agreed to test these steroids for this drug ring. That allowed them then to market it on a website as being, you know, 100% pure, the real deal. You know, they vouched for it, its purity. And so he did not get paid any money for this.
Isn't that what you normally do when something's kind of bunk? You just say that it's 100% pure or all natural or...
That's true. But they actually also posted the lab results. This professor, whose name is Yanni Wu, no longer works here, of course, but he would actually create a spreadsheet with the test results, which he provided to these conspirators. So they had it. So, you know, they had the proof.
What's going to happen to him?
Well, he was sort of a minor player because, you know, he didn't earn any money off this. He did it. According to authorities, because he was developing a testosterone-based nasal spray, and so he needed human growth hormone as well as testosterone for this.
Who doesn't?
Exactly.
So this makes me think about Breaking Bad and Walter White, who taught chemistry, and he used his skills to help make the best meth, you know, in New Mexico. And I laugh when I think about it, but this, although this guy wasn't making it, he was certainly using his scientific background to improve the quality of their supply.
Absolutely. And because of that, these guys made a lot of money. About in only a 6-month period, they grossed $700,000. And these guys are already, I mean, all of them have pled guilty. The main culprits are doing prison time right now. That's Michael Lee Hereford of the state of Washington and Hal Donald Laverne Clayton, also known as Hallie Clayton. They were the ones who operated this. Professor Wu pled to a misdemeanor, a simple steroids possession charge. So he is expected, he can only get up to a year in federal prison, but he's really not expected to get any prison time. In fact, his lawyer told me that he believes that because he's a brilliant researcher that he can continue to do anything he wants in that field after this is all behind him.
Do you think anybody's likely to hire this guy, knowing he used his knowledge and his research to benefit a criminal enterprise? It seems like you'd have a tough time getting a job.
That's very true. That's very true. You know, he's very accomplished. He has a doctorate degree, and he worked hard. He has produced a lot of scientific papers, and now, because of this, who knows what his future looks like? It's going to be difficult for him.
Maybe he could write a book.
There you go. There's always that.
Jen, speaking of teachers, you had a story this week about what we mentioned at the top of the show about the Prosper ISD teacher who went to the police department instead of the internal police department at the schools to report a teacher's advance on a student.
Yes. Just north of Frisco is a town called Prosper, and it's been experiencing some growth, and they now have their own police department within the school. So it is a police department just like the one that you would find in any city, except for they just work in the school. And the teacher had a conversation with a student where the child told her that a teacher had hit on her and, you know, touched her leg. And so the teacher told the school staff, the administrators, but she also went to a police officer who worked for the town of Prosper and told him what had happened. And this generated a police report, and the police department told the school what happened because it was within the school's jurisdiction. And the principal and several other administrators called the teacher in for a meeting where she was reprimanded for going to the city and not telling the just the school district.
And here's another clip from that recording of her meeting with the principal.
And we're going to take care of this young lady, but we're going to do it in a way that's behind the doors in a confidential manner to protect her, to protect all parties involved. And that's why we have an internal police department to take care of these serious situations.
But this was obviously something that was recorded by her, probably without the principal's knowledge. What has the school district responded with?
The school district says that it wasn't a reprimand, that it was just a way to tell the teacher what the procedure is. But the problem is the law says you have to tell law enforcement or Child Protective Services. You can't just tell the administrator. You can't rely on somebody else to do the reporting, or she could have been charged with a crime. But to me, if I were told by my boss, this is one of the top three things that have made me mad that a reporter has done, I would feel reprimanded.
What one of the damaging things about this is the audio recording there. You rarely get to hear administrators talking about trying to keep something hush-hush. How has the release of this helped her case?
Well, right now, she's still talking to the school district about what happens. The law does provide for compensation for people who were reprimanded for reporting allegations of child abuse. And no lawsuit has been filed. She filed a grievance with the school district. But so far, they are maintaining they did everything right. And they're going to continue to try to discuss things, but if nothing happens, the teacher's talking about filing a lawsuit against the school district.
Earlier this week, we talked to a different ISD chief, Craig Miller. We're joined in the studio now by Chief Craig Miller of the Dallas ISD Police Force. Chief Miller was a longtime veteran of the Dallas Police Department before he went over to Dallas ISD in 2011. Is that right?
Correct.
Well, thank you for joining us, Chief. We want to talk to you a little bit today about a couple of things, one of which Jennifer Emily, who couldn't be here right now, did a story this week on a Prosper ISD incident that happened up there in which a teacher said that she was sort of maligned for going outside of the ISD police force to report an incident involving a teacher and a student that she thought was inappropriate. She just reported it. She was told, you know, that they were supposed to keep it in-house. Obviously, I won't ask you to comment on that. I know what position you're in, but I was curious, how should these investigations go when you're dealing with an ISD police force versus, say, the Dallas Police Department?
Well, I've learned a lot in the last 4 years, having been in the school district. And one of the advantages that we have as ISD police departments, first off, understand the difference between an SRO and an ISD police officer. And we could all be called SRO officers.
But, and what does SRO mean?
A school resource officer. We could all be called that because, in essence, that's what we are. But at the same time, I think there is a distinction. In 03, we started the process in Dallas ISD of transitioning to be a police department, and in 05, that was completed. And prior to that, our schools were actually patrolled and maintained by the Dallas Police Department. And we had Dallas PD officers in the schools. And I know I wasn't in the unit at that time, but I know a little bit about the relationship that the officers had. And you know, one of the advantages that ISD has is that our officers, I work for the superintendent of schools. And by law, I have to report directly to the superintendent of schools. He's my immediate boss. And as I also have a relationship with the administrative staff within the school system. And that is an advantage that I have, that I'm in meetings that take place regarding students and the education and the food processing and everything, the transportation of the kids. And so getting to know the administrators gives me a distinct advantage, maybe over a police commander who is affiliated with the schools but doesn't necessarily work for the schools. And, in my case, I think our officers are able to on the campuses to develop a relationship with the administrators. that goes beyond just the criminal aspect of it. You know, sometimes I think people are confused that our officers are not the same officers, have the same capabilities as a Dallas police officer, for example. Mm-hmm. But that's not at all the case. I'm using the same gun I had as a Dallas police officer and the same holster as a Dallas police officer, and I can make an arrest and do everything I could do as a Dallas police officer, as a Dallas ISD police officer.
Would you prefer if there were incidents of misconduct involving teachers and students that they go through the ISD police force rather than to the police department, or does it matter?
Well, we have detectives in our department, the ISD police department, and we investigate criminal things that happen on our campuses, cars that get broken into, property crime type of issues. There are some persons crimes that we investigate as well. We have an MOU with Dallas PD that crimes of a sex nature for juveniles, those students that are under 17 years old, are investigated by the Dallas Police Department. And the reason for that really isn't that I feel like their detectives are any better qualified than our detectives. It's just they have the ability to collect physical evidence that we don't. We don't have a physical evidence processing section. They have the ability to do some things that our detectives don't necessarily have the ability to do. But people that do that for a living, and that's what their day in, day out job is, and understand and have that relationship with the Advocacy Center are very much advantageous to them. Our relationship with Dallas PD is really critical for us to be effective and be able to do the things that we do on our campuses and answering calls, and not just in crimes of sexual nature.
Could you tell me a little bit, with an ISD police force, you've obviously worked for the Dallas Police Department, navigating this sort of jurisdictional, responsibilities, who does what when, where you have overlapping areas. How do you navigate through that, especially in your position?
Well, we have to have a relationship with them because so much of what takes place on our campus actually then spills over into the community. We have incidents where there may be fights at school, and there may be an arrangement where they're going to meet after school at a location that's outside of the school, and so we have to be able to communicate that to Dallas PD. In our athletic events, we have incidents that happen there at the facilities that spill over into the neighborhood, and we have to have a relationship with Dallas PD. For me, being able to reach out to Chief David Brown or Chief Cato, in the event I have a situation, or if I get some intelligence that something's going to happen and it may involve the city or could have implications on them, to let them know that so that then they can prepare the people in the field to be able to respond, is beneficial to them and it's beneficial to us as well.
Another incident we saw involving school and obviously a police department in Irving. Irving police arrested a 14-year-old boy, Ahmed, as we know, for bringing what it turned out to be a homemade clock to school. Now, forgetting all the politics for a minute, as a police force, is there a benefit to having an ISD police force in the schools versus having an outside just calling the Irving police or Dallas Police Department in and saying, take care of this, we've got an issue with a student?
Yeah, I personally think there is an advantage. I think that from the criminal aspect, to look at the elements of something that someone might be a bomb or might perceive as a bomb, obviously we're going to take that serious. If we feel like we need additional resources, we're going to request those. But I think having the ability to speak with the administrators, our officers on the campuses have a relationship with those students on the campus. That's a part of what we really want our men and women to do on the Dallas ISD Police Department, is to foster a relationship with the students. But at the same time, we have a relationship with the administration. And should an incident come up that might be sensational or might be something that's going to draw attention, I think for us to look maybe not just at the criminal aspect of it, which we certainly can, but to look at the administrative aspect of that. And knowing how school discipline works and knowing the process that's involved there might not be something that an SRO would know, is that they may look at things as more black and white. Is it a crime? Is it not a crime? Versus, are there administrative resolutions to this that things could be handled maybe in a different way? I don't know the specifics on that case, but I do know that we, by having a relationship with administrators, it's helpful to us, and then I think that makes us be able to do our job more effectively.
There's one more thing I wanted to cover with you, which was something I found interesting earlier this week. It made a lot of news when it happened. The dentist who was killed in Uptown in her parking garage. There's been a lot of intrigue about this case, and so far the actual shooter has not been publicly identified. And yesterday, the Dallas Police Department put out a note. So yesterday being Tuesday, saying we don't have any information to release, but it's active and open. There's all kinds of things going on, but we can't tell you about them. Having been a homicide supervisor, you probably had a lot of these cases that have gotten more public interest than others. How do you deal with sort of the public dying to know what happened? Perhaps that's a poor choice of words, but wanting to know what happened in a case versus trying to keep the investigative details close to the vest?
When I was in homicide from 07 to 11, we had 750 murders during that time. And so we certainly worked a number of sensational investigations that there was a lot of public interest in, a lot of high-profile individuals. And, I think the thing that's really important when conducting a homicide investigation is, on the surface, to people outside, things seem obvious. But in reality, they may not be what they seem. And I think that knowing that that people, there are more situations going on than what the public may know about, and you really, when you're doing a homicide investigation, even though someone says there's the suspect, you have to conduct the investigation and then determine who the suspect is. And I think sometimes people get a little bit confused in wanting to say that person did it, and we know now with eyewitness identification that not everything is always as it seems. But I think that before they put out information, you still have witnesses that could be available that might have information, and that information could be something that could conflict with something like a lineup that could be hindered. And in a case like this, you want to make sure that you've got everything done possible and that you've done it the right way so that when that time comes and you do make an arrest and you do you develop a suspect and then you make an arrest, that case won't be thrown out when it goes to trial.
Is it bad news for an investigation to go on that long?
No, not necessarily at all. I think it means that they're taking their time and they're deliberate and they're doing what needs to be done. I do think that there are a number of people to talk to, and sometimes those people aren't where you can reach out to them and touch them and be able to talk to them. And I think right now they're trying to get everybody together. Once again, I don't have any specifics on that case, but I just know that in conducting an investigation like that, there are sometimes people that are not immediately available to the police that they need to talk to, and until they talk to those people, they can't move forward. And so, sometimes physical evidence is not like it is on TV either. If someone says, let's get some DNA, they can get it on TV, within 30 seconds. In the police department, it may take 30 days, 60 days, 90 days to get that information. So while they're developing their case and they're trying to determine if there's a suspect or who that suspect is, just because it's obvious to one person it's this way, it may not end up being what it appears to be.
All right. Chief Craig Miller, Dallas ISD Police Department, thank you for joining us. And that's it for us today at Texas Crimecast. We hope you're listening to us on iTunes. We're now on it. Special thanks to our guest, Dallas ISD Police Chief Craig Miller, for coming in. Log on to DallasNews.com for the latest on the Chief Brown saga and more of our stories. Dallas County District Attorney Susan Hawk also returned to work on Thursday after a two-month absence to deal with depression. That's ongoing as we're recording this, so stay tuned for the latest on that. We'll be back again next Thursday. In the meantime, for Jen Emily and Kevin Krause and our producer, Brian Ellidge, I'm Tristan Hallman. Stay safe out there.